Task 3. You are going to listen to the story of immigrants to Canada. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below, then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, complete the sentences 1 to 10 using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Today we'll be visiting a unique place called New Iceland in the Canadian Prairie Province of Manitoba. The capital of the region, I kid you not, is called Gimli, like the dwarf in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings series. Very appropriate when you consider the mythical, magical quality of Icelandic folklore. I've always wanted to visit New Iceland because I'm a big fan of Iceland, and when I heard that in my own home country there would be a place filled with Icelanders, I was instantly intrigued. New Iceland is called that because in the late 1800s, thousands of Icelanders fled west from a volcanic eruption. They ended up suddenly in Midwestern Canada, and they became known back in Iceland as Western Icelanders. For a short time, their colony was autonomous, and they even had their own constitution and laws. And while those rights were eventually revoked by the Canadian government, today there are still well over 30,000 people of Icelandic descent living there. Gimli is an unassuming small town, very similar to many of the small towns scattered about Midwestern North America. At first glance, there are only a few hints of what makes this region special. There's the Reykjavik Bakery, which serves only Icelandic pastries, and other stores like Turkesson's that simply sound, well, more Icelandic than Canadian. By the edge of Lake Winnipeg, there is a prominent statue of an old Viking facing the water, as if to defend the region from the encroachment of the rest of Canadian culture. And then, of course, there's the New Iceland Heritage Museum, filled to the brim with old photo galleries, Icelandic rocks, and artifacts from the original settlers. Before I arrived, I made contact with local author and historian Alva Simonsen, a friendly woman. She also runs tours from the New Iceland Heritage Museum, and she was more than happy to show me around and give me some insights as to how New Iceland came to exist.
For almost 300 years, a fur trade company ruled virtually all of what is now Western Canada, and was just called the Rupert's Land, and it was a fur trading empire. And slowly, the governments in Eastern Canada realized that they wanted to expand further west. Then by 1870, they had convinced the little area of Manitoba to become part of their country. Because at that time, the U.S. was filling up bit by bit from the East Coast, and from there, the settlers were moving west, and they were worried that they would come approaching further north and steal the rest of Canadian territory away from them. Once the American settlers would move in here, it would be harder to keep these areas Canadian. So they were doing anything they could to fill this part of Canada up.
Which is why they gave...
They saw this group coming in through immigration. They were planning to head to Wisconsin. Some officials said, well, we will give anything you want to stay here. So they chose this chunk of land, and they made it completely self-governing, and they said, you could do whatever you like, put up your own churches, you know, it's yours.
So was it actually its own country at one point?
It wasn't a country. It was like probably similar to a self-governing Indian reservation, as they are set up in Canada. I think if you murdered somebody, they could probably send someone in with the Canadian law and arrest you. Other than that, you were pretty well responsible for everything within the area.
And now let's get back on the road again. The prairies are so flat they remind me of the ocean stretching out as far as the eye can see. Right now we are on our way to the small town of Selkirk, where there's a local fisherman by the name of Chris Christensen waiting for us who has a lot of great stories. Do you feel much of a connection with the Icelandic heritage?
Absolutely. All the old pioneer families here, the people who came here with nothing, half starved and freezing and took to fishing because that's what they knew. And fishing became big for them commercially. It was nothing before that. Lake Winnipeg was not harvested really to any extent. The Icelanders made Lake Winnipeg and no one else.
Today we'll be visiting a unique place called New Iceland in the Canadian prairie province of Manitoba. The capital of the region, I kid you not, is called Gimli, like the dwarf in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings series. Very appropriate when you consider the mythical, magical quality of Icelandic folklore. I've always wanted to visit New Iceland because I'm a big fan of Iceland, and when I heard that in my own home country there would be a place filled with Icelanders, I was instantly intrigued. New Iceland is called that because in the late 1800s, thousands of Icelanders fled west from a volcanic eruption. They ended up suddenly in Midwestern Canada, and they became known back in Iceland as Western Icelanders. For a short time, their colony was autonomous, and they even had their own constitution and laws. And while those rights were eventually revoked by the Canadian government, today there are still well over 30,000 people of Icelandic descent living there. Gimli is an unassuming small town, very similar to many of the small towns scattered about Midwestern North America. At first glance, there are only a few hints of what makes this region special. There's the Reykjavik Bakery, which serves only Icelandic pastries, and other stores like Turkesson's that simply sound, well, more Icelandic than Canadian. By the edge of Lake Winnipeg, there is a prominent statue of an old Viking facing the water, as if to defend the region from the encroachment of the rest of Canadian culture. And then, of course, there's the New Iceland Heritage Museum, filled to the brim with old photo galleries, Icelandic rocks, and artifacts from the original settlers. Before I arrived, I made contact with local author and historian Alva Simonsen, a friendly woman. She also runs tours from the New Iceland Heritage Museum, and she was more than happy to show me around and give me some insights as to how New Iceland came to exist.
For almost 300 years, a fur trade company ruled virtually all of what is now Western Canada, and was just called the Rupert's Land, and it was a fur trading empire. And slowly, the governments in Eastern Canada realized that they wanted to expand further west. Then by 1870, they had convinced the little area of Manitoba to become part of their country. Because at that time, the U.S. was filling up bit by bit from the East Coast, and from there, the settlers were moving west, and they were worried that they would come approaching further north and steal the rest of Canadian territory away from them. Once the American settlers would move in here, it would be harder to keep these areas Canadian. So they were doing anything they could to fill this part of Canada up.
Which is why they gave...
They saw this group coming in through immigration. They were planning to head to Wisconsin. Some officials said, well, we will give anything you want to stay here. So they chose this chunk of land, and they made it completely self-governing, and they said, you could do whatever you like, put up your own churches, you know, it's yours.
So was it actually its own country at one point?
It wasn't a country. It was like probably similar to a self-governing Indian reservation, as they are set up in Canada. I think if you murdered somebody, they could probably send someone in with the Canadian law and arrest you. Other than that, you were pretty well responsible for everything within the area.
And now let's get back on the road again. The prairies are so flat they remind me of the ocean stretching out as far as the eye can see. Right now we are on our way to the small town of Selkirk, where there's a local fisherman by the name of Chris Christensen waiting for us who has a lot of great stories. Do you feel much of a connection with the Icelandic heritage?
Absolutely. All the old pioneer families here, the people who came here with nothing, half-starved and freezing and took to fishing because that's what they knew. And fishing became big for them commercially. It was nothing before that. Lake Winnipeg was not harvested really to any extent. The Icelanders made Lake Winnipeg and no one else.